Welcome to another edition of GhostBiz here on the Business Report on Over 1035. My name is Gary Strubel, and every week I get to speak to the finance ghost to catch up what's going on in the markets around us, what's happening in Southern African business. And ghost, welcome back to the show. We did mention retail last week. It's been a bit of a bloodbath for retailers over the last couple of months, but we have two stories today to talk about, and they are linked. The first one is Boxer, which is now all grown up and listed on its own listing on the stock exchange. Decent results for them. And also linked some improvement from Pick and Pay. Perhaps you can just unpack those two specific companies for us.
Hi, Gary, and all the listeners. Yes, let's talk about the retailers, because that really has been the story of the past few weeks. And I love the description that you gave there of Boxer. Very much is the case. They've pretty much flown the nest now. Pick and Pay had to let them go and be separately listed as part of Pick and Pay's plans to clean up its horribly broken balance sheet and really just its group in general. And all that you look for on a new listing is for a business that is trading in line with what they've promised the market. So if you look at their pre-listing statement, their guidance for full year 2025 was like-for-like growth of 5 to 7% and then total sales growth of 10 to 12%. The difference there, the 500 basis points attributable to new stores being opened. Because Boxer is still growing, they have a model that really, really works, and they are rolling it out like crazy. They are giving ShopRite plenty to think about among the lower income consumers, because that obviously is where Boxer competes so well. And importantly, gross profit margin is in line with expectations as well. So it's just a good start to life as a listed company for Boxer, and long may it continue. Now, if we move on to Pick and Pay, we see quite a different story playing out there, because at Pick and Pay, it's not a game of, hey, we're really successful and we're going to just keep doing what we're doing. It's a turnaround, and a turnaround means a game of inches and trying to claw yourself back from the brink, essentially. And the metric that they are using to measure that is like-for-like sales. And the reason they're doing that is because total sales growth is actually worse than that, for the simple reason that Pick and Pay is closing stores. So very different to Boxer, where they are opening stores, and so total growth exceeds like-for-like growth. At Pick and Pay, it's the other way around. So like-for-like growth measures how the stores are performing by adjusting for the fact that there are fewer stores now than there were a year ago. So it is the right metric. And there are at least some signs of life. Like-for-like sales were up 3% for the 19 weeks to 5 January. And that is better than 1.6% for the 45 weeks to the 5th of January. So the market quite liked seeing that. And that's obviously, you know, good news for Pick and Pay. At the end of the day, the market was pricing in a really horrible outcome for them, and they do seem to have come back a lot. They were given a real boost, of course, by what's happened in South Africa in the past year. You know, the magical disappearance of load shedding almost entirely, apart from a weird one last week. And, you know, just the GNU sentiment and decreasing interest rates, all of these things have really helped Pick and Pay survive. Plus, of course, all of the initiatives that they've taken internally, you know, credit where it's due. They've done a lot to try and sort it out. And they are still running way below ShopRite. This is not the same as Boxer, where Boxer is not just competing adequately with ShopRite, but actually, you know, beating them in many cases among lower income consumers. Pick and Pay is nowhere near that level. They're just trying to hang on.
I'll just steer our attention to another company that, like Pick and Pay, has also been suffering quite a lot of pain over the last 2 or 3 years, and it just seems to be exacerbated at the moment through a number of trends over which it doesn't have a lot of control, and that's MultiChoice. The share price is holding at around 125 rand a share, but as you point out in your newsletter, it really is only because Canal Plus haven't gone away yet. Canal Plus have come back with another stab at trying to get hold of MultiChoice. Perhaps that is where the question we need to ask is, why is Canal Plus so interested in MultiChoice, and how do they see it working?
Yeah, look, I've got to tell you, on the question of why is Canal Plus so interested in MultiChoice, I wish I could tell you with any degree of certainty. I can't really, because I look at MultiChoice's numbers and they are poor. And obviously, you know, Canal Plus is looking for, there's obvious answers, right? There's the whole distribution in Africa, access to all the content, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I get all of that. But on a standalone basis right now, MultiChoice is definitely not a shining star of financial performance. In many ways, it feels like some of their recent decisions were around building the business for sale rather than building the business to be profitable. It's almost the way that a startup would behave, where it's all about, okay, almost at any cost, let's just get out there and, you know, get into these new markets and find new customers, and don't worry too much about the profits. That'll come later. So this deal needs to go through, because I've got to tell you that MultiChoice share price is due to one thing and one thing only right now, and that is the Canal Plus offer. If that offer for any reason falls over, or regulators say no, you know, take your pick, then I genuinely don't know where the bottom is for the MultiChoice share price. I think it is a long way down from the current levels. And Canal Plus has also, on top of all of this, had to jump through a lot of hoops to get this deal across the line because of specifically South Africa's laws. They've had this double whammy of not just BEE that they need to manage, but also the laws around foreign ownership of a broadcaster. So they've put together quite a clever structure with their advisors where MultiChoice South Africa, as the entity with the license, the contracts with subscribers, is basically carved out. It will be 51% black owned. That's through a combination of Putumanati, the existing BEE structure, as well as a couple of consortiums, and then a trust for employees as well. And Canal Plus via MultiChoice Group will then own 49% in the local entity and have 20% voting rights. So that kind of ticks all the boxes in one go. And then there will be a commercial arrangement in the back end that then actually regulates how that entity basically transacts with the rest of the group when it comes to content provision and subscribers and how money flows and everything else. So very complex, lots and lots, as I say, of jumping through hoops to get this deal across the line. And then their reward at the end of the day is to own MultiChoice, which has not exactly been a very exciting asset recently. So it's a bit of a lifeline, I've got to tell you. This deal is borderline miraculous. And it now sits with the local competition commission. And all I can say is I sincerely hope that they approve it. Because if they now stick their oar in and say, you know, no, that's not enough or whatever, then this deal is almost certainly dead. And I don't know where that leaves MultiChoice, but it won't be good.
Let's go back to retailers, because a retailer that really stays under the spotlight, so to speak, from a flashiness perspective. It certainly doesn't have the glitz and glamour of Checkers or Woolworths and all the drama at Pick and Pay. But Pepkor is turning very quickly into a very multidimensional company, incorporating both credit and fintech, quite aside from some smart retailing. And your story seems to suggest that this is all turning into a very, very powerful machine. Give us a little bit more of a sense of why you think Pepkor is a rising star.
I think when it comes to the clothing retailers, Pepkor was the pick of the litter in the latest flurry of results. They really, really did well. And it's been quite interesting to track the share price chart, because after the release of results, even though competitors like Fashini and Truworths and Mr. Price have very much been one-way traffic, you know, at the time Pepkor released results, all three of those were down sort of mid-teens year to date. So a really tough start to the year if you came in with a portfolio of those companies. And then Pepkor's share price said, thanks, I don't want anything to do with that. I'm turning back up again. So still down year to date, but the market looked at Pepkor's results and said, okay, this thing kind of stands apart from the rest. I'm not entirely sure why Mr. Price didn't get the same love, because their results were much better than the others and they've just been thrown out with them. I guess relative valuations explain that one. But if we move on to Pepkor, it really is just the story of a coherent strategy, I think, and just layering on this fintech and credit offering in their core business. So they basically have two large segments and both of them grew well. That's furniture, appliances, and equipment. You know, that was up 8.4%. And then you've got clothing and general merchandise, and that was up 9.2%. So high single digits, that's really solid. And then you've got fintech up by a whopping 35%. So that gets driven by success in the core businesses in Pepkor, like Pep and Ackermans, which were up 12.1% and 9.7% respectively on a like-for-like basis. So when the core business is working and people are in the stores, then it means people are also buying on credit and using value-added services like the insurance, for example, or the cell phone-related stuff. Pepkor also has Flash. So they are in that payment space in the sort of informal into formal market. So a very, very interesting set of results. They call it their credit interoperability strategy, which is quite the little tongue twister, but they've done really well with it and it seems to work. And the one thing that wasn't so great in those numbers is Avenida, which is the Brazilian retailer, which I'm quite sure we've spoken about on the show before, because I found it so interesting that they did an acquisition in South America and I kind of really wanted to work for them because it's interesting. Of course, not everything goes up in a straight line and In this particular case, Avenida actually came under some pressure. They had a bit of a drop in like-for-like sales, and then reported currency earnings because of Forex movements were then quite a lot worse. They do, however, say that they've had a good start to 2025, so that's good, but actually nowhere near as good as what's happening in Pepkor's local business, where they seem to have nailed the back-to-school sales cycle at the start of January. So Pepkor really doing well at the moment for me, just looking purely at performance, so not referencing valuations on share prices, just purely performance. It's definitely the pick of the local clothing retailers right now.
Thanks, guys. And you didn't think you were going to get away without just a cheeky little hint of a question around Trustco. Trustco now seem to have put out some more communications this last week around continuing along the path of a NASDAQ listing, continuing a JSE delisting, and perhaps very shortly your thoughts on that.
I've started to call it Trustco Tuesdays, and I laugh every time because I'm starting to wonder if you aren't actually the person who releases these announcements in time for us to do this weekly show. Because it really does feel like week in and week out, if Trustco is going to say something, it's going to happen on a Tuesday. So it is quite funny. And yeah, in this case, the latest is now they seem to be pointing towards doing this whole NASDAQ listing again. So at one point they talked about it. Then they said, okay, we're getting rid of all our existing listings. And they sort of left the door open to maybe still do this NASDAQ one, but they weren't completely clear about it. Now it looks like this is very much their plan, because they're trying to set up a dedicated contact list for shareholders to basically manage what they call a transition period, where it sounds like Trustco just won't be listed at all. They're looking to get rid of all their current listings and then list again on the NASDAQ. Look, I'll say it again. This is a company that has had a very, very difficult relationship, bluntly, with the JSE. They've been late on releasing financials. They've not been the model corporate citizen from a listing perspective at all. And the NASDAQ is the big leagues. So I'm still not sure what the plan is here or why they think that going to the NASDAQ improves their lives versus the JSE, but it is what it is. That seems to be the route they want to take. And I guess we will wait until next Tuesday to find out more if the trend is anything to go by.
That's all we have time for this week on Ghost Biz. We'll be back next week to talk more about what's going on in the world of business here in Southern Africa. And you make sure you check us out wherever you pick up your podcasts. You can pick up the Ghost Biz segment, as well as you can listen to us live on nova.com.na if you happen to be out of FM signal.